Today on Pilot's Discretion, our guest is record-setting helicopter pilot and Grammy-winning musician Randy Waldman. He tells us about flight instructing in helicopters, how musicians and pilots are similar, and his favorite music venue. Pilot's Discretion starts right now. Welcome, everyone. I'm John Zimmerman, and thanks for listening to Pilot's Discretion from Sporties. Remember to visit sporties.com/podcast for show links and complete archives, and send us an email with your comments or guest ideas, podcast@sporties.com. Today, I'm thrilled to have the jazz pilot, Randy Waldman, on the show. You may not know his name, but you almost certainly have heard his work. He's a prolific composer, conductor, and performer who has played with some of the biggest names in music, including Frank Sinatra, Stevie Wonder, Michael Jackson, and Beyonce. He has also been Barbra Streisand's pianist and conductor for over 35 years. If I read his complete discography here today, we would be here all day. But somehow in the middle of all this, he learned to fly airplanes and helicopters, earning his commercial multi-engine and instrument certificates. Today, he is an active helicopter flight instructor and even set a speed record in 2003 in a Bell OH-58. Randy, welcome to Pilot's Discretion.
How you doing? Thank you so much for inviting me.
We usually don't waste a lot of time on the show asking our guests why they learned to fly or how they got started, but I wanted to ask you because it seems improbable. So how did you get into flying while holding down a job as a touring musician?
It was completely a fluke, not something I'd ever thought about or imagined. And I was just riding my bicycle one day with some friends, and I went past a radio-controlled airfield, and I saw some guys doing all these aerobatics with these little model airplanes and helicopters. I just thought it was fascinating. So I thought, maybe that'd be kind of a fun little hobby. So I walked up to this one guy who was doing loops and rolls. And I said, I'd love to learn how to do this. Do you teach this? Or is there somebody that teaches this? He goes, well, I don't really know anyone that teaches this. I'm an American Airlines pilot, but I could teach you how to fly a real airplane. And I'd never thought about it in my entire life. I went, oh, okay, I'll try that. And I took a lesson or two and I just got hooked. So I started with airplanes and really took to it. And at one point I figured, oh, I should get my own airplane. So I bought a Mooney 201 and just flew constantly, flew everywhere. It was just a whole nother world. And it was such a diversion because all I've ever done was music since I was a really young kid.
And where did helicopters come into the picture there?
The helicopters was another accident. We were doing a week performance at an arena with Barbra Streisand, somewhere in California, but it was far enough away from my house that we were put up in a hotel. And the whole orchestra, 60-piece orchestra, was in a hotel. We were getting ready to start this thing, and she got a cold. She got sick. So they said, we're sorry. And a lot of the orchestra members were from New York and all over the place. They said, well, we'll put you up. Barbara's sick. We don't know how long it's going to take till she's feeling better, but we'll put you up for the week. So we were in this big, beautiful hotel for a week with nothing to do. And I was looking out the window and I saw helicopters buzzing around. I thought, well, that might be fun. I'll go find out where they're flying and see what it's like to fly a helicopter. I found it was at Long Beach Airport. I went in, took one lesson. As soon as we picked straight up from the ground without any forward movement, I went, oh, this is magical. I was hooked. That was it. So I started taking lessons and got my private pilot's license. I decided to buy a helicopter. So I bought a Bell 47, the original MASH helicopter. And then all my airplane friends wanted to try and fly this thing. And I didn't feel really safe having them try it because I was just a private pilot. So I thought, maybe I should get my instructor's license. So I did that and I took all the written tests and I started taking lessons toward that and got my helicopter's instructor's license and that started the whole ball rolling.
So you started playing piano as a young kid, as you mentioned, but you took up flying later in life. So what's different about learning a skill later in life versus when you're a kid?
Well, based on all my students I've had, the younger you are, the quicker you learn. And, you know, it's never too late to learn, but people are definitely can absorb things quicker when they're younger. But for me, because all I ever did was music, it was such an incredible diversion. It was like this whole other planet. And I just got so passionate about it. When I would do sessions, I would always have some written test prep book up on the piano. So I'd play some notes. If I had four bars or more off, I would be reading a question. I'd be studying something. It was just, I just got really hooked.
Today, you're a very active flight instructor and helicopter instructor at that. Now, I remember what I did to my first helicopter instructor, and it was scary at times. And I thought you summed this up well in an interview a few years back. You said, quote, "My students are trying to kill me every second. It's great." Now, I agree with the first part of that 100%, but tell me why it's great.
Well, that makes it challenging and it never gets boring because, you know, it's a skill set that's very complicated. You're using both feet, both hands. They're all doing different things at the same time. So everybody's bound to do the wrong thing at some point, you know, probably more than once. So you just have to be really, really on your toes, really ready for anything. They could step on the wrong pedal, pull the collective in the wrong direction, turn the throttle in the wrong direction. Whatever they can do wrong, they will do wrong. So it just, it's a challenge. And keeping challenged is fun, you know, it keeps things interesting.
What's the best advice for a fixed-wing pilot transitioning to helicopters? A lot of listeners to this podcast, airplane pilots, maybe thought about learning to fly helicopters. Give us a tip they should keep in mind if they go up for a lesson.
One thing I found is that very experienced fixed-wing pilots are so comfortable in the air that they expect to be able to fly the helicopter in one or two lessons. It's a completely different skill set. So all I could just say is don't get frustrated. It's like starting over. It's like learning from scratch. Because I've had a lot of helicopter students that are experienced fixed-wing pilots, airline pilots, corporate pilots. It takes them almost as long, if not just as long, to learn as somebody who's never flown anything in their life. Now, I'm also an airplane CFII, so I've had helicopter students that I've taught in the airplane. In 5 hours, they're ready to get their airplane license. The airplane is a very stable platform and machine, and once you trim it out, it just wants to fly. So for a helicopter pilot, it's like, this is all we do. You know, you just sit there and trim it out and then just wait till you land. So all I could say in answer to your question is for airplane pilots, it's a lot of fun. It's challenging, but don't expect it to be the same as flying an airplane because it's a different skill set.
I remember being pleasantly surprised how much I remembered or how much was the same with airspace and weather and all that, but how many of the control movements were the exact opposite in a helicopter.
Exactly.
And when I wanted to push right pedal, it was left pedal. And when I wanted to add power, I really needed less power. So you almost have to unlearn some habits for sure.
It's a completely different thing. Yep.
You said that, you know, you teach flying very actively, but I've heard you say you could never teach music. Why is that?
I guess I'm spoiled, but by playing with the best people and the best singers and the best artists. So hearing a wrong note or bad rhythm, it's like nails on a chalkboard. So I've been very fortunate to be able to have worked with so many really, really great, great artists. So I don't want to hear bad music ever. It's not pleasurable. Just because of so many great people, I get to play with the best and I like to keep it that way.
As you might have guessed by now, I have lots of questions about flying and music and how they might be alike or different. So here's one that I think about a lot, and I'll try to put it in music terms. So let's take Oscar Peterson, a musician who I love, great jazz pianist, and I've heard you talk about his playing too. To me, he has such a distinctive feel to the way he plays. It's not just about the notes. It's the phrasing. It's the energy. It's the style, whatever word you want to use. Do you think pilots have feel the way a great musician does?
I do. Absolutely. Some pilots can learn everything mechanically and they're safe and they're good pilots. And other pilots just instantly feel every little nuance. They feel every little vibration. They're just part of the machine. You know, and everybody has a different talent for something different. Some people are meant to do something. Other people, it's a lot harder to achieve the same thing. You know, some people can draw, some people are great artists, some people are musicians, some people should never sing, some people should never fly. Everyone's got a different talent and they have to find their talent. So, you know, you can see it in a pilot when they can really feel the machine and they make subtle movements based on what they hear and what they feel. And other guys have no clue. They're kind of more like a bull in a china shop, but they still know what to do and they can still fly and they're still safe. But, you know, there's different levels of expertise.
Can you teach that feel, or is it just something you're born with?
I think you can teach it to a point, but just like anything, music or art or learning languages, some people are born with one talent and not another. I can try and draw something and it's always going to look like a second grader drew it. I don't know how people can draw cartoons and, you know, be incredible artists. And it's like, wow, it's like some magic button. It's like the hover button that some students accuse me of hitting when I'm hovering because they don't know what I'm doing differently than they are.
Now, the advice I heard there is the same I heard about landing in the airplane. Keep your eyes focused far out. Don't look too close ahead. You know, a lot of beginning pilots learning to land an airplane, they focus really close to the airplane when the pros look at the end of the runway. Same for a hover, right? Keep your eyes focused further away so you don't over-control, I think, is a great tip there.
Every maneuver as you're getting near the ground is really difficult if you're staring close. And our eyes, our natural thing is to focus somewhere between 10 and 20 feet in front of us. So you've got to really consciously make it part of the maneuver as you're coming into the ground, whether it be a normal approach or an emergency procedure or auto rotation, whatever it is, you've got to make it part of your routine to go, okay, eyes further out. You've got to force yourself. So then you get a much bigger and better picture peripherally of everything, of your heading, your altitude, your speed. It really, really helps to look further out. So you're right.
I find that the pilots who have the best feel tend to be the ones that notice things. A lot of times it's not even the fancy footwork or the skills. It's they're more self-aware. They're aware of what they're doing. They're aware of what the aircraft is doing. They notice small changes in sound or vibration or things like that. So sometimes a great first step is just to make a pilot be more aware of their surroundings.
Well, the earlier helicopters that I taught in did not have a governor. So you were manually controlling the RPMs. Because I taught in the Bell 47, the Hiller 12C, the Enstrom, all these were old helicopters without a governor. And if you're staring at the gauges, you're going to hit something if you're near the ground because you need to be looking outside. So I would try and get the students to recognize any subtle change in the pitch of the sound. That's what I mean by the pitch of the rotors. And I would hold up a tuning program in my phone and say, look, this is an F sharp. If you hear it go, that means your RPMs are changing. Don't look at the gauge, make an input. Then you can take a quick glance to verify what you've done. So people don't think of that sense, one of the senses we use. They don't often think that sound is one of them, but it's a really important one.
That's such a wonderful way to say it. If you hear your rotor RPM go from F sharp to F, you know that you're losing some power and you might want to roll on a little throttle. That's great.
Exactly. Tune up.
Let's talk about the speed record in the Bell. Why did you decide to do that?
It was the 100th anniversary of the Wright brothers inventing the airplane. And I was talking to a guy, another aviator that I knew, and he said, we should do something special for this 100th anniversary. And we had access to this military jet ranger called an OH-58. And there's not many of those around anymore. And we thought, well, let's see if we can set a speed record because there's probably not many records that have been set by this helicopter because it's an older helicopter and it's military. So we picked a route and we filed the paperwork and we went and hit the timer and we coordinated it with the tower. And the second we touched down, they hit a timer and we timed it. So now we're in a world record book, which we didn't go that fast, but nobody had done that flight in that aircraft. So until somebody breaks it, we hold the record.
And where's the most interesting place you've landed a helicopter?
Oh, almost everywhere I go. In most lessons, we're usually landing on riverbeds and mountaintops and all kinds of fun places. Just a couple of days ago, I think I told you earlier, it was kind of getting late in the day and the weather was starting to get bad. And I was flying with a friend in one helicopter and we were talking on the radio to a guy in another helicopter. And he said, why don't we stop for coffee somewhere? And I told the guy, I was like, oh, we don't have time to stop, find an airport restaurant and stop for coffee. It's going to start getting dark and the visibility is getting bad. He goes, no, we're going to stop right here in the riverbed. We landed our two helicopters. He pulled out a chair, an unfolded little table, a little coffee machine with butane. And we just sat there on the riverbed having snacks. And it was pretty cool.
That sounds pretty great. Randy, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I have some more questions about music and flying.
Sounds good.
Earn all your pilot ratings and keep your flying skills sharp with Sporty's Pilot Training Plus. This all-inclusive membership unlocks Sporty's complete library of award-winning video courses, so you can learn anywhere you have your phone, tablet, or laptop. For one annual fee, you get access to over $1,500 in courses, a smart investment in your flying career. Plus, enjoy free shipping every day of the year at Sporties.com and apply for one of our three annual flight training scholarships. Learn more at Sporties.com/pilot training. Now, back to Pilot's Discretion.
We are back with Randy Waldman, who once described his dreams as a musician this way. I wanted to be a studio musician. I just thought it was very cool to just be able to walk in and one day you're a jazz guy, the next day a country guy, and the next a rock and roll guy. I just love the diversity of the music and just trying to sound like the real deal no matter what they put you in front of. So maybe I'm stretching here, Randy, but that sounds a little bit like an airline pilot, right? You don't know the specific airplane you're going to fly. You don't know the other pilot probably you're going to fly with, but you show up to work and you go flying and the record is amazing. So are there lessons there from a studio musician that might apply to life as a pro pilot?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, if you're a pilot, you're flying different aircraft, you need to know all those different aircraft well enough to be proficient and to be safe. And the same thing in music. If you walk in, you think you're kind of a jazz player and all of a sudden it's a country song. If you don't have some reference and you haven't listened to country and you haven't analyzed some country piano players or whatever it may be, you're not going to sound very good. So you have to be well-rounded and have some background in all these different styles, the same way as if you're flying different aircrafts or going into different airports, you kind of need to be ready. So you got to do the homework. And some people are great musicians and they're really good at only one thing. And then that sort of determines what end of the business do they go in. I would imagine some pilots, just end up flying one aircraft for a long time. And that's great because they get really good at that one aircraft and that's fine too. It's just, there's just different choices you can make based on the amount of experience you have.
And how can you tell you're in sync, whether it's with a fellow musician or maybe a student in a helicopter? Is there some cue you're looking for that you're just working together as a team well?
Well, with music, it's obvious because if something's off, whether it be the timing or the notes, it's very obvious to everybody instantly, Years ago, music was all played free. You weren't referencing anything for tempo. Nowadays, anytime you can do a record or a movie or anything, 99% of the time you're playing with a click track, which is like a metronome. One of the first times, I'm going to get a little off track here, but one of the first times they tried to put music to a cartoon, it was a disaster because they couldn't sync it up. Well, they decided to have the animator animate a bouncing ball through the entire cartoon. So the conductor had something to watch to keep the orchestra in sync with the movie. That was the beginnings of a click track. In an aircraft, you kind of know right away if people are completely always flying out of trim and the nose is always going up or going down, that there's something, either you're not explaining something the right way or they're maybe just not necessarily meant to be a pilot. I had one student years ago who was a math PhD. He was literally a rocket scientist and he could not multitask. He couldn't hold his altitude and go in the same direction at the same time. And I tried everything I could think of. So finally I said, okay, let's try something. Because we would fly through the air, we'd go up 200 feet and down 200 feet. I said, every time you deviate from your altitude, more than 100 feet, you have to donate $10 to the charity of my choice. And he laughed. He thought I was kidding. I go, no, I'm serious. So we did a few lessons. He'd go up and he'd go down. I would just check it off. And then his wife would send a check to the Linda Blair Animal Society, which was the one I chose. And after about a month or two of this, he goes, I'm tired of paying all this money. And he figured out some way to maintain his altitude. he just made it motivation.
That's a great tip for a new instructor. Pay attention there, that align the incentives, sometimes financial ones, and performance will follow.
Exactly.
Here's another question about music and flying. I've heard both pilots and musicians get the advice to have a plan B in case that airline job goes away or in case you don't make it as a professional musician. You think that's good advice?
Well, if you're really passionate about something, that's all you want to do, I don't think you should even think about a plan B. Because a lot of times you just have to keep trying and trying, and you're fighting a lot of obstacles. But if it's something you really want to do, you won't take no for an answer, and you just keep trying, you know, and your odds are that you're going to eventually achieve the goal that you want to achieve. If you have a plan B, then you always think, well, there's something to fall back on. So it's maybe an easy out. For me, I never thought about it because all I could ever do was play the piano, and there was no other options. That was my thing. I didn't play baseball with other kids. I didn't do any other thing. It was just music, music, music. So it just, luckily, because I was so immersed in it, and that was my whole life, I just seemed to always be in the right place at the right time. And when I got called to do certain things, they went, oh, okay, he could do that. And then they called me for something else, and one thing would lead to another.
So let's talk about one of those calls. Your music career really took off when you went on tour with Frank Sinatra, I think at age 21, which sounds like an unbelievable experience. So other than the music part of that, what did you learn doing that at such a young age? I mean, lessons about poise or flexibility or dealing with people. What were some of the lessons you can remember from that must be memorable tour?
It was musically one of the greatest experiences anybody could ever have, because Frank Sinatra was one of a kind. And we traveled with a full orchestra and a full big band. So it was about 15 or 16 horn players and a full string orchestra. And the piano, I was sitting right in the middle. The funny thing was, we never rehearsed with Frank. So the first time I saw him was at Madison Square Garden, or one of these big places. And many of the songs were just him singing and me playing the piano. Or at least they'd start out that way. A lot of times the first verse would be just him and I. So I'd never met him, never spoke to him, never rehearsed. And after the very first show, in the middle, he walked over, leaned over the guitar player and whispered something. Then he went back to the middle of the stage and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, that was beautifully played by Randy Waldman." And from that point on, he announced my name every night.
Wow.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. But the first I was, you know, a little bit of a panic. It's like, okay, I've never even rehearsed these things with him. You know, most singers are the opposite. They want to rehearse, rehearse, rehearse. Well, everything is perfect, you know, or they can relax.
Unbelievable. As you said, there's only one Frank Sinatra. Now, I know more recently you composed some music for the Living Legends of Aviation event, included Kenny G and Morgan Freeman. So what's your process like that? How do you approach a special occasion like that?
I got a call from Kenny. It was a musical arrangement, so it wasn't an original song that I composed. But because it was for aviation, they wanted to perform the song "Fly Me to the Moon." And Living Legends have honored many astronauts and aviators, so it was an appropriate song. And he said, "Hey, we'd like to do this thing." And I said, "Can Morgan Freeman sing?" He goes, "I don't know." Good. So I did the arrangement. I recorded a track for them to sing on with piano, bass, drums, and I hired a guitar player, and we made this track and did this arrangement. I sent it to Kenny. He goes, "Oh, this is great." He asked me to, you know, to send him a chart or a piece of music that showed the background horns and different things so he could learn exactly what to play. But that's another time when I don't think Morgan Freeman saw it or heard it until the night of the show, which was the night before last, or 3 nights ago. And they did it. It was great. The audience loved it. It was very unexpected.
All right, Randy, we always like to finish these episodes with a ready to copy segment.
Okay.
So I'll throw out some questions on a wide variety of topics and you give me your quick answer. Are you ready to copy?
Well, as ready as I can be, sure.
What's the hardest part about flying in LA? Is it the airspace, the traffic, the weather? What's the most challenging?
I would say the airspace, because there's so many overlapping airspaces because there's one airport after another after another. So when you're trying to teach a student, they have to be flying and changing frequencies constantly. And not only that, they have to know what to say, where to say it, and they have to know where they are before they can even call. So that, I think in a busy environment like this, that's probably the trickiest thing.
Pick your turbine helicopter. Which would you rather fly, an A-Star or a Jet Ranger?
A-Star.
And why is that?
A-Star's got more power. It could carry more weight. And the biggest thing, the Jet Ranger is great, but it's got that big wall between the front seats and the back seats. So when you're bringing passengers or friends, they're very removed and sort of like they're not with you. And if you leave something in the back seat, like charred, it's impossible to get. So the A-Star is just, it's more like a little club seating situation. It's just more connected. You don't have that wall separating you.
If you could change one FAR when it comes to helicopter flying, what would it be?
I think a less, when you take the written test, I would say a good percentage of it is meaningless information you'll never use. I think they should spend more time on things regarding safety and things that you will use and things that you do need to know instead of learning how to calculate the base of a cumulus cloud and all these other things that really aren't practical.
What's your best piece of advice for a brand new flight instructor?
Expect the unexpected. Be ready for anything. Keep your hand close to the throttle. Keep your hand close to the cyclic. And just know, when you least expect it, and as soon as you start getting complacent, the student's going to do something that you really don't expect. So just be ready for it. More than once, I've had experienced airplane pilots let go of the controls of the helicopter because they're so used to the airplane being trimmed out. You can't let go of a helicopter, control, because it's just going to flop to one side or another, and then the helicopter's going to flip over. So with experienced fixed-wing pilots, be ready for that and just realize that they're used to something completely different.
What's more difficult, learning auto-rotations in a helicopter or learning to improvise on a piano?
That's a good question. Learning to auto-rotate, even though it does take a certain amount of feel and a lot of practice to listen to the sounds and to feel the vibrations to know when your RPMs are going up and down, that's something that you can learn. If somebody really wants to learn, they could practice. And if you have a good instructor, you really start picking up on all those subtleties. To improvise, I think you can learn to a certain extent, but if you've got it or you don't. So many of this violinists and string players have come up to me through the years and said, how do you improvise? Because they just play what's on the written page and they don't understand. They don't understand how you would begin to approach improvisation and what notes you play and what notes you choose and why you choose to leave some out and why you don't. And so I think that's something that you kind of maybe have to have an innate talent for it to really be good at. Whereas the flying, if you really try, you have a good instructor and you've got the information, you can conquer it.
Andre Previn, the great conductor and pianist, once described himself as a musician who played jazz rather than a jazz musician. And I have to say, that's how I feel about helicopters. I'm an airplane pilot first, and I learned to fly helicopters, and I've got about 500 hours in them, but I'm really not a true helicopter pilot. I'm an airplane pilot who happens to fly helicopters. How about you? Which side are you on? Are you an airplane pilot first or a helicopter pilot first?
I started with airplanes, but once I found and discovered rotary flight, I was just so hooked that that's what I've concentrated on the last 25 years or more. So I'm definitely at heart a helicopter pilot first.
How about on the music side? Are you a musician who plays jazz or a jazz musician?
Well, jazz, I would have to say I'm a jazz musician who can play a little bit of everything else. My first influence that I got hooked to was Louis Armstrong and music from the 20s and 30s. And that just really excited me when I was a kid. It's just been a steady growth from there. So jazz is in my DNA.
And who is the best jazz musician most people have never heard of? Who should we go listen to right now that we don't know?
Okay, I got one for you. You've never heard of him, though. a trombone player named Bob McChesney, one of the greatest musicians, technician, improvisers, jazz players, classical player, one of the greatest musicians I've ever met. And because of the era, he's grown up in where people can't buy physical CDs and they don't buy physical anything, everything's streamed. It's really hard for somebody to make a career as a solo artist because you can't make money doing it because you can't really sell anything. Most music's listened to on streaming, and the artist and the composer and the arranger and the musicians, they don't get pretty much anything from streaming. So Bob McChesney, there's the answer to that question.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
How about the best music venue you've ever played?
Ooh, I love the Sydney Opera House is incredible. There's quite a few of these ancient ruins in Italy that are like old Colosseums where you picture the old lions, you know, eating the Romans. I've worked at quite a few of those and they're breathtaking. So I can't even tell you the names of them, but there's quite a few throughout Italy that are just amazing. And they're just sort of these eroded rocks that were at one time beautiful, you know, arenas. Trying to think of, Royal Albert Hall in London. It's a really, really great place. And the sound is fantastic. Disney Hall in Los Angeles is another beautiful place.
All right. Our last question is always the same on Pilot's Discretion. You have one final flight and we want to know, what are you flying and where are you going?
Definitely going somewhere to eat. And I'd love to fly an A-Star to any good airport restaurant.
Randy, thanks for being on the podcast.
John, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Pilot's Discretion, brought to you by Sporties, training and equipping pilots worldwide for over 60 years. For more episodes and today's show links, visit sporties.com/podcast. I'm John Zimmerman. We'll see you next time on Pilot's Discretion.